That would be at page 303.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope you guys are going to treat me good tonight.
Yeah.
Anyway, the budget for this year pretty much, it's very lean. It's almost not much difference from last year. There were just a couple small changes of a few dollars. I tried to keep it as low as possible, but I just want to bring up a couple things. We're barely making with the mileage, okay? Because this year we have more supervisors and committees a little bit further away, and we're barely going to make it. We're going to be okay with this year because I can transfer something to the line. Also, we're kind of with the chairman promotional account. It's pretty low. I know it was pretty much a special year, this one, because we had a lot of picture taking. But the biggest thing, and I don't know what's going to happen for next year, is with the youth in government, the expenses for that, that went pretty high. Like this year, just for the bus, it doubled from what it was last year. We do have the pictures, which I did not know until today, actually. We cannot put a frame, which I'm looking at from another line, to add some money to put the frames and the pictures that we take for the old county board, so we can put them on the wall. So that's where I'm at.
All right, discussion.
You were saying that the mileage was coming very, very close to the budgeted amount that we had for supervisor mileage, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. The way the cost is determined per mile, what formula, how is that achieved?
Well, one of the reasons is because the committees that we have this year, actually we have seven supervisors on each committee. Most of the supervisors, they are in three committees, versus before there were like one or two. And some of the supervisors overall, they live a little bit further than what they were last year.
Just in terms of the amount per mile, it's what, like 54 cents or something like that?
No, it's up to 62 and a half, I
62 and a half cents, okay. So where does that 62 and a half cents per mile come from? Who supplies that number?
It's IRS.
It's the federal government.
It is federal government. Yes. Okay. All right, so here's my question. That is beyond our control. That 62% that comes from the outside. Also beyond our control is the cost of petroleum products. As you can witness, anyone drives to the pump, lately it's been somewhat of up and up. Do you feel that going into this next budgetary cycle we have enough mileage funds there? Should we increase it? What's your...
Well, I guess that we have a couple of different ones. One thing I'm asking for is with the budget resolution, that if we have anything left over, we'll go towards the next year, and we can use some of that. However, we really thought it was going to be a little bit more left over this year, which we don't have it. So the way we can do it, and also another thing is the staff development, because with the new supervisor, even with going to WCA, there is a lot more interest for the supervisor to go to conventions and whatever. If that's going to happen, again, either we're not going or we're going to have to adjust it. We could be adjusted now or at the time of the closeout, I believe in April, you know, then we'll see if there's any money left, which usually goes to the general fund. Then at that time, we can transfer some money to the county board budget if we need it.
So there's some flexibility.
There is some flexibility. I just wanted to everybody to be aware of where we're standing now, what can happen, and what are the alternatives that we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any other discussion, Dave?
Mr. Chairman, I would move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion. All right. Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is the county executive budget and page 314. Financial.
Good evening, Chairman and Vice Chair and Supervisors. It's wonderful to be here tonight for my first presentation of my county exec's budget. As you can see, I have a 1.6% levy increase. There's not a big item or increase. There are no increases in any of my discretionary funds, and it includes a $5,000 decrease to the professional service item. There was no increase to my staff, chief of staff, and my office manager's salaries this year. Also, I did not take the county car, and we have combined the mileage lines. So if you're comparing year to year, the mileage and the oil and gas lines have been combined into one line item. With a reduction of about $250. So it's a very simple budget.
Erin?
So when you say your staff hasn't taken an increase, does that include that they're not going to get the 1 and 3?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Discussion? Anyone? Is there a motion? Brian?
Just an observation, if I could. In the executive's budget outlay, you did take an increase for mileage and travel, yet in the executive's, where we have a lot more people impacted, we didn't take an increase, relying on lateralization later on, supposing that monies will be there. Just an observation, but...
Well, I didn't take the county car. That had been an item that the previous county exec had utilized. I'm using my own personal car and not taking any mileage unless I usually go out of county. So I've taken a couple of times where I've gone up to Milwaukee and then once to the Counties Association, took mileage for that. So then I'm utilizing my own resources to do outreach throughout the county.
I would suggest otherwise, but that's it's a personal decision.
It is.
All right, further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move approval.
Second.
All right, further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, next we'll go on to the Corporation Council's budget.
16, 17.
Go. Good evening, Supervisors. I will try and hit just sort of a couple of quick highlights and then certainly happy to answer questions that you might have. First, I would note that the if you look at the personnel chart for the office, it indicates that there are 5.7 FTEs. There are 6 people in the office. It's 4 attorneys, 2 support staff. 0.15 of the first assistant and 0.15 of one of the 2 office assistants are charged to the liability unit in recognition of the fact they spend a chunk of their time liaising with WIMIC, our insurer, but I do have 6 people in the office. In terms of the increase over last year's budget, I'd note that it's approximately just shy of $83,000 more than last year. That is made up almost entirely out of 2 categories, if you will, salaries and other personnel-related expenses, which make up about $39,000, and an additional $40,000 for legal fees, which is outside counsel, which was put in the budget by the county executive above and beyond. Let me quickly explain for those who haven't heard this presentation before. We put $40,000 in, or I asked for $40,000 for the office budget for legal fees. That is fees for outside counsel. We employ outside counsel in those instances where I believe there's either an actual potential or perceived conflict, where it's something very specialized, or where it's time sensitive enough that we think it's simply more efficient to have somebody from the outside handle a matter than it would take us to sort of get up to speed on it. There's budgetary language that indicates that balance rolls over on a yearly basis if it isn't spent, because this is the sort of fund that we may go 2 or 3 years and not touch it at all, and then we may have a couple of years where we have 2 or 3 large ticket items that we need to deal with. Unfortunately, that has been the case over the past couple of years. Examples of things that we've used it for is litigation. We've had a couple of ethics investigations that had to be handled by outside counsel. We've had some employment matters where either we anticipated they were going to go to litigation, or we were just too close to the individuals involved to feel that we could appropriately and without conflict handle it internally. And then there are two matters coming up in particular that I think really justifies why the county executive asked for an additional $40,000, which I should point out she's proposing come from ARPA and not levy funds. And that is, number one, everyone is very well aware of the casino proposal. That is a highly, highly specialized area of law dealing with the tribal governments and those kinds of negotiations. And secondly, and I think I've announced this before the Finance Committee previously, but in case I haven't, it is my intent, and the county executive agrees, to undertake a review of our ethics ordinances. Again, that is something that I would propose to have done by an outside entity to take a look and see, are we sort of employing best practices? Are there places where our ethics ordinance could be amended or improved? So those two together, like I say, make up the vast majority of the increase in my ask over last year. Other than that, it's about $3,000 additional dollars for subscriptions and books and manuals, based primarily on costs going up and the fact that we are going to be undertaking a new project going forward that will require an ongoing approximately $1,500 year subscription fee. The other thing I would like to just quickly call the committee's attention to, particularly for those of you who have been here before, there has for the past several years been a revenue component of the office's budget, $700 per year, which was supposed to be collected from joint services. The IGA permits us to charge both the city and the county to charge joint services for legal advice and services. I suggested to the county executive that I just don't really see us as a revenue generating unit, and that's not really our purpose or our remit, if you will. And secondly, we are essentially paying ourselves, because obviously the city and the county fund joint services, and then if we build joint services for the legal services, we're basically just collecting that money back. So I did ask the county executive whether she thought that was worth continuing. The previous county executive had felt, for whatever reason, that yes, he wanted us to bill for those services. She's agreed that there doesn't seem to be a lot of value, $700, I suppose, but a lot of value in that revenue line, and so did agree with my ask to eliminate that. With that, like I say, I certainly am happy to answer any questions about specifics that the committee may have.
Discussion. Bill.
As far as the outside counsel goes, you're saying it's $40,000. Is there any balance left over from previous collections of funds for that purpose within this budget?
No. So as I said, there is budgetary language indicating that would roll over. A couple of years ago, through an oversight, it was allowed to lapse back to the general fund rather than roll over into that account. So we started over at $40,000. And again, the last couple of years have just been fairly high drivers of legal costs. So I don't believe there was anything in there that started this year. It is possible that there will be something at the end of this year. I'm not counting on it, but it is possible.
So where do we see this line item for the outside counsel in our budget? Is it?
It's legal fees.
It's the $80,000.
We're still not seeing it.
Like halfway down the page.
Yeah.
So 52120.
Oh, I see. Okay. Very well. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Aaron.
You're looking to hire outside counsel to evaluate our ethics policy ordinances and things like that, you said?
Yes, and make recommendations as to how we might update them.
Is there any input that the finance committee can give, is able to give on who to hire or not hire for that, or is that a strictly RFP process, or?
Historically, and I would look to other people in the room, but historically has been really just in the purview of the office. I will sometimes consult and advise with the board chair and the county executive, but ultimately I think it is my decision who to hire. Now, having said that, if there's a particular individual or firm that you are have strong feelings about, I'm certainly willing to listen to that. I'm not going to guarantee here that there's what the outcome of that would be. And I mean, I guess I'm not opposed to an RFP process, because this would be sort of,
I'm just asking if that's required.
Different, but it's not required.
Okay.
No, not for legal services.
Well, I know there's some supervisors on this committee that would like some input in that, so.
Into who's picked or into the review itself?
Who may possibly be picked.
Okay.
Or not picked.
Okay, again, I'm certainly, I'll be very honest, and this is not a decision that's been made, it's not something I've discussed with anybody. My first thought would probably be to go with Attorney Andy Phillips, only because he is the general counsel for the WCA. When I spoke with him briefly about whether that was something he would do, he sort of laughed and said he's actually got about a half dozen counties right now that have made that same request of his. I think he is uniquely situated to have a sense of what other counties are doing, but again, I'm certainly not set on that if there are strong feelings against it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to the chair, to the court counsel. So, on this is a very important, it's a kind of a big deal, this ethics. So, a couple of thoughts I have is, one is, you know, we have to look at what to do with fraud. You know, how we're going to handle fraud, and that needs to be addressed in the ethics code. One question I have is, I've used when I was the CFO here, I worked with Crivello quite a bit and always had pretty good experience with Crivello. Is because Crivello, and I think we had a pretty good result with the recent item that they helped us with. As an example, but I remember I worked with them on multiple other things, and it went pretty well. I know that there's a lot of firms there. Is there a reason why Crivello couldn't do a thing like this? There's no conflict because they do other work for us as a routine dealing with liability, or we could also have them do this. I'm guessing they have a pretty good bench there that could handle this kind of work.
I'm not aware of any reason why they couldn't. As you said, we utilize them for a number of different purposes, and yes, I think they do very good work. Yeah. We've been very lucky in the attorneys that we've utilized, I think.
You know, I think picking the law firm that's going to help with that is very important, and I think it could make a difference, a big difference on the success of the development of the policy. So, you know, it might be good to look at a firm that, you know, just to get a fresh look at some of the things that have happened here at the county. So that might make that go a little better too. So, and I yield the floor.
Anyone else? Yes, Bob.
Just back to the $40,000 for outside counsel. I want to see if I understand correctly. Is it our understanding as a committee that from this point forward, at least in this budgetary cycle, if there's not the entire amount of that $40,000 allocated, that it will roll over and be present for the next budgetary cycle? Is that some modifications being made?
Yes.
Okay. Second question is, if I understand correctly, on this particular budgetary cycle, during your presentation, you said the $40,000 would come from ARPA funds. Is that correct? Not levy dollars?
So there's sort of two $40,000s, if you will. There's the $40,000 that I asked for in my ask to the exec, and that would be levy dollars. She has added an additional $40,000 to that pot, and that second $40,000 is ARPA funds.
Right, so ARPA for outside counsel, and the first $40,000 is levy, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, any other discussion? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Second.
Who made the motion?
Okay. Aaron made it.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor.
Next item is the sheriff's budget, and that starts at page 50. Sheriff.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, it's always a pleasure to see all of you. Some of the numbers I'm going to give you is what I started out with at the Judiciary and Law Committee meeting, and a resolution was made that added a few FTEs, two detectives and one deputy to our FTE that we were requesting. So I don't have those numbers added into this. But at the start, we were looking at a tax levy increase about 6%, operating expenditures about $5.6 million, with increase of $5.6 million, and estimated revenue increase of 3.99%, or $370,000. The operating expenses, come on up, look at here. They'll figure it out. Operating expenses, the big items here is personnel, 4.36% increase or $1.5 million increase. The Deputy Sheriff's Association negotiated two raises for 2023, 3% in January and 2.75% in July. We had it at one Deputy Sheriff FTE. It's as of leaving the Judiciary and Law, it was raised to two deputies, one data analyst, and we had one detective, and it was raised to three detectives. And the data analyst, I will have, I think the deputies and detectives, all of you understand what those are, but the data analyst, I was going to have Captain Miller actually explain what the data analyst does in a short taking a breath.
All right, so so the data analyst is needed for our New World system. So the record management system that we use is extremely robust. Back in 2014, when we were building that program, we went and did site visits to a bunch of different agencies throughout the United States. And a lot of the agencies, almost all of them, had data analysts. And what they do is they are able to extrapolate that data that is already embedded into our software, from call volume to response times to just personnel, all the way down to personnel files. And so with the data analysts, they'll help us with the crime patterns, trends, help us with getting the reports to our villages that are contracted with us, to boards like yourself that ask us for data, the racial equity, I always mess it up.
Inclusion
Commission has asked us for a ton of data that is embedded within our system, but with a simple user like myself who had built the program, I call myself a simple user at this point because I do not have the time nor skills to get into the data that's really needed. Again, we bought a Ferrari and we're using it as a Pinto at this point. So the data analyst will help move us into a couple of different gears and get that data out so that can help, you know, not only our bureau, but all the way down to, you know, getting, talk to Supervisor Decker today about our squads. Those type of pinpoint accuracies of what we need for budget, I think our data analyst could even help in that.
Three questions about the data analyst position.
So this is nobody does this now.
We don't do this.
We currently do not have a data analyst. Do we get data out of the system? Absolutely, but it's very time consuming.
Other agencies similar to us that they've gone and visited have three data analysts on their departments to go through the information. So we have none. All right, thank you.
No,
I'm sorry.
Is the chart, is the salary associated with this person going to be spread across, that's not the right word, spread across the municipalities that we police for? Is that part of how we're going to offset that cost?
No.
This analyst will be working for us. it isn't helping the city police department or
not the city. He's talking about the contracted agencies. I don't know that the use is going to be. I mean, could we bill it? Sure. Are we going to see that?
I'm just asking.
Thank you. We've also reclassified 8 position titles. It affects 30 employees, and it's about a $21,000 addition to the budget. Contractual services, that went up 12.44%. And a huge part of that, a very huge part of that, is NAFCAR, our jail inmate medical services. I'm sure most of you are aware that when we first signed with them, I know what they did is they under-budgeted for personnel as to come in and work inside our facility. And then all heck broke loose, and they couldn't keep nursing staff because they were getting underpaid. And this fall, we actually had bumped up our contract $30,000 a month. For next year, the entire NAFCAR contract is going to be raised $470,000. The prisoner transport costs, that's going up about $50,000, and truthfully, we don't even know that we're going to make it with that this year if we bump that up. Where we used to have agencies pick up our inmates across the country, they would charge us $1,000 to pick them up from Arizona. Those expenses now have jumped to about $5,000 to pick them up. We actually tried one time this year sending our own staff out to pick up inmates, and it was, we saved a little bit, but it wasn't substantial. The sheer cost of last-minute airplane flights and all the different things that go into it raised the expenses, the cost, substantially. We're raising investigation, our budget in that, by $30,000, and that goes back to HIDA. HIDA cut our funds by $30,000, so we're just helping to plant $30,000 into the drug unit and the K-Dog to help what they need to do throughout the course of the year. Let's see. Supplies, it went up about 9%. The biggest one is fuel, and we all understand that one. The second biggest one is pharmaceuticals. If we, on a year-to-year basis, we don't know who's coming in here and what kind of medication we need to supply to them. Currently we have, I think it's eight inmates right now with very expensive medication that they're receiving. Of course, we have to pay for it while they're here. Capital expenses. Motor vehicles, we've increased it by $154,000, and that truly is because even the cars that are coming in, we don't know. The ones that are going to be ordered, they can't tell us how much they're going to be. And we haven't even got all of our 2022 cars in yet. So getting vehicles is a huge problem for government agencies, and obviously we're part of that too. $34,000 increase in replacement of a walk-in oven for detentions. Revenues, we're looking to increase the revenues from electronic monitoring, inmate phone and tablet use, extended supervision fees, and we're working on decreasing the actuals. Last 2 years, we got money from the state of Wisconsin, and that money came because of COVID. The prison system was not accepting the inmates, so we had to hold them, and we were holding them. The state of Wisconsin reimbursed us. Well, that's done. They have taken all the people that they should have taken that we've been holding, so that form of revenue has dried up. Federal inmate housing, you all know that 2 years ago, immigration removed their detainees from our facility, and we still have U.S. Marshals. The revenue that we currently have listed in our budget for 2022, we won't be able to meet that. We have not been able to reduce that number for the budget process to match what we're getting. So we're looking at reducing that gradually over the next couple of years. County ordinance fines, we haven't been able to quite match what we're doing up, so we've reduced it a little bit. Let's see, HIDA, we already talked about that. I think that's about it. We're ready now for any questions you guys have.
All right, so just so the committee understands, the proposal that you've made here is what's in the book one detective and one data analyst.
Yes.
And that's your motion to the committee.
I'm going to go with the motion that to accept what the Judiciary and Law Committee proposed, and I thought that was an incredible opportunity for our department.
Can we have
what's that?
Can we have them speak to that, Clara or Barna? I'm sorry, not Clara, Barna or Patty?
Sure.
So the Judiciary and Law Committee made a recommendation to add two detectives and one. Two additional to the one, and one additional deputy. That would increase personnel costs by $356. That was their recommendation to the Finance Committee for consideration.
Right. Discussion, Dave.
I had questions other than on the positions, if that's okay.
Sure.
On the revenue section. Through the chair to finance. I know I heard the sheriff mention that a couple of the numbers were not going to hit, but we've been looking at your forecast, and I don't think that's anything new to you. The revenue shortfalls are folded into the general fund forecast, and there's nothing new. You've got that under control, and you know what's happening there, so we're in good shape there. On the COPS and school support grant, could you tell me a little bit about that and the increase that we got on the COPS and school? It went from 169 to 268, and so maybe what do we do with that, and what do we do with the increase?
So that increase is related to us talking to two elementary schools in the county about adding another SRO officer to those two elementary schools. So it would be one SRO officer split into two half-time at each elementary school. So this contract hasn't been signed into an action. It's just kind of them talking to us about it. I wanted to include the revenue in case we did end up actually going forward with the contract.
And the school would pay us for that?
It would work the same way as our other two SRO contracts.
And how many SROs do we have in total?
Wilmot and Central High School, so we have two.
That's it? Yeah, and the rest are done by other law enforcement agencies then?
The city high schools are done by the city police department. Yeah. But this is Salem Grade School and Silver Lake, Riverview Grade School have talked to us about it. So we wanted to kind of prep the way and let you know that if it does happen, we haven't got anything in that line item right now, I don't think.
And you could come back with that if you needed to, but do you see a need for that anywhere outside of, you know, so the city covers the city. Do you see a need for that? You're the sheriff, you know security and what we need to do to be safe here. Is there more we should be doing in that area or?
It's overkill unless something happens. This last week we had two prank phone calls. It sounds like the exact same person that's doing it. It's a person with an Indian type accent and calling it in, at least the ones that I've heard, and he's doing it across the country. And where was it, Bradford? Yeah, Bradford. And the school resource officer was there, took command of the situation, went to the area that was supposedly had a gunman there, and also directed all the other assets that were coming into the facility. So it's a great person to have there to take care of a situation like that, and if a situation really does occur, to respond immediately. Hopefully in our lifetimes we never have anything like that happen here in Kenosha. And if nothing like that happens here in Kenosha, then you've spent a lot of money and you didn't need to. But the school resource officers in the high schools do more than just protect the school. They teach classes. They help the students. They help investigate some crimes. They help solve sexual assaults with kids or with different situations that go on. They're a great resource for the schools. At the elementary school, in the high schools, I think they're very valuable. And I think in the elementary school, they would be valuable. In a situation like Sandy Hook or what happened down in Texas or the other places, they're priceless. You can't have enough. So would I love to see a deputy sheriff or a police officer in every school? Absolutely. It would be a great resource. If nothing happens for the next 30 years, it was still a great resource, but it's an expensive resource. So it's something that they have to weigh out.
Continuing to follow up on this item. So I met with the district attorney. I met with a lot of the, I met with you. I met with, thank you for the nice meeting we had. I met with several of the administrators and officials here when I got elected. And when I met with the district attorney, he talked about interacting with a foundation that had been created through Sandy Hook, and that they had developed, they're starting to develop and had developed some science that helped deal with some of the challenges we have that you referred to. You never know if you wasted the money if you prevented something over 30 years, because you don't know if it would have happened because you prevented it. But is the left hand working with the right hand on a thing like that, where the district attorney knows about this really cool science that's being developed to help deal with the school issue that we all know why I'm talking about and that you talked about, but and then the sheriff interacting with the DA on a thing like that?
The district attorney and I talk pretty frequently, but I'm not aware of that one. I didn't pick up on that one.
Okay. That's maybe something for the future to connect on that with
absolutely.
The sheriff and that program. Mm-hmm. Then I yield the floor.
Aaron. Following up on what Marna spoke on, I am on the Judiciary and Law Committee, and I would like to make a motion to add two detectives and one deputy to the sheriff's FTE.
And I would second the motion, and it's $356,000.
That's correct.
So I would second the motion for that dollar amount you mentioned.
All right, discussion on the proposal.
I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. Between what was originally recommended by the county executive and by the committee, we're looking at a total of two detectives or three detectives?
Three
detectives.
If you add what was added to the budget by the county executive, three.
Okay. So three detectives, then one additional deputy.
She also added one, so okay. It would be two additional.
Okay.
And then the one data analyst, which okay. The county executive added.
So we know from our experience that collective bargaining is still done for the sheriff's deputies. Would the data analyst also be represented by collective bargaining?
No. It's a civilian.
You're just a layperson, so to speak. Okay.
Not a sworn officer.
Okay. As far as this particular discussion, that answers my question. Thank you.
All right, further discussion? Yes.
Oh, well, that's right. They're discussing the personnel. I had a different question, so I'll
go ahead. Oh, not on the proposal.
Not on that.
All right, further on the proposal. Where do you see the need for the additional?
We've actually lost a few detectives over the last couple decades, and we've kind of morphed them into different positions on the department. So we're actually less now than we were a few decades ago. One in the drug unit, and for, I don't know if you realize it, but the city, at the beginning of the year, they pulled out and they put them into a city, it's not called the gang unit, I forget what it's called.
SIU? SIU, I think is what they call themselves.
It's called something. It could be the SIU.
Yeah.
Special investigation.
And let's see. So we're looking to put one in the drug unit. It's pretty badly needed. And then we are also looking for white collar and sensitive crimes. That's very lacking on our department. And the scamming and everything that's going on in our community and across the country is immense. So this one additional person will help with in a special investigative unit like that. The other one would be in general assignment. Our calls for service have gone up tremendously in the last several years. We used to, actually from right after Christmas till about when the snow melts, it was actually very, very slow. It's not like that anymore. We don't have a slow time. We depend on our detective bureau a lot to take care of the different scenes and different situations. Any serious accident, any shooting like we had up on Sheridan Road, anything that involves someone being seriously hurt or killed, we send our investigators out there, and they're a major part of the investigation. We also do trainings for our staff too. During in-service, our detectives help our younger, and a lot of our deputies are very, very young. About 30% of our deputies at the end of this year will be, if I remember the number right, about a third will have less than 2 years on the department. So training and our detectives and the ability to solve crimes is extremely important. So, to answer your question.
How many vacancies, if any, do you have now?
None.
Right, and further discussion? Yes, right.
A number of questions. Thank you, Chairman. One, I fully support a data miner. I mean, going through critical data and understanding where, I'll use a simple one, where concentrations of specific crimes are happening so you can deploy accordingly or develop a strategy for it. Great asset, great tool, use it in sales because we like to thin slice everybody and figure out what we can do best. You mentioned that you initially wanted, and then through conversations with the exec, you came to a new number. You're the sheriff. You're responsible for the sheriff and policing assets that we hold and how we execute. Why would we give up headcount if it's critical? In other words, that's what I'm trying to understand. Are these critical or wanted headcounts, being that it was negotiated away at one point?
It's not negotiated away. We present a budget to the county executive, but the county executive, and I'm not speaking on behalf of the county executive than currently ever in the past, but their job is to put together a budget that reflects what the county board would like to have. And you guys came up with a percentage that you wanted to see the tax levy raised to. The county executive's job, I believe, is to come up with something in the ballpark of what you guys requested. So we do our best every year to, we request what we would like, and we requested more than that, and we do understand that there isn't an endless pot of money. So during the Judiciary and Law Committee, that group made the motion to raise it, and I was thrilled by that opportunity. Since I started in 82, we've had 6 districts in the county. We still have 6 districts in the county. The community has grown substantially since 1982, but we still only have 6 districts. And those are responsible for many calls. The reason we have more squads, more deputies on the road right now, is because of contracts that we've been able to negotiate over the last few decades with Paddock Lake, Silver, Salem Lakes, Bristol, and Summers. We're able to add squads that they pay for. The deputies that we add will help bolster our deputies that we have on the road every single day. Our calls for service haven't gone down. They've gone up every single year. And whether it's for just the sheer traffic and the accidents, if you guys are on the county board, you may have, one of the biggest complaints I hear is traffic. Most people feel very safe living in their homes. They feel safe where they work, and it's usually the roads.
Yeah.
And people would like to see more squad cars doing radar. They'd like to see them sitting at a stoplight. They'd like to see them pulling people over until it's them. And then, our deputies right now really go from call to call to call to call. And we're fortunate, we started the take-home squad car 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it is, and we can call out in emergency squads in a very, very short time. If we have an ice storm, if we have a snowstorm, if we have flooding, if we have a major accident, we can put out a call and we can get 10, 15 squad cars to respond, usually within 30 minutes to the scene. So we have a benefit there. But we need to add, Kenosha is not shrinking. We're still one of the hottest spots in the state of Wisconsin in the country. And as we grow, there's a cost to it. And law enforcement is a huge cost to it. To have the ability to have the amount of officers on the road is something that I think the average person expects. They expect us to be able to respond to a call. They would like us to, I mean, remember when I was on the road and you'd see a garage door open and you'd go knock on the door at 2 o'clock in the morning and you'd ask the person, did you leave the garage door open? And they said, we didn't know you guys actually did that. Well, we don't, it's difficult for us to do that now because, like I said, we go from call to call to call. So to add a person every year or a couple people every year is something we just have to do, this county has to do.
To continue down that path, then, you mentioned fiscal accountability. Where would you see or envision $356,000 being found to cover the additional headcounts?
Well, from what I would gather, that wasn't our responsibility to do that, but I would assume it'd be raising the tax levy unless there are some other places in the budget.
Yeah, the question was, where would you see? So it didn't matter what others thought. But curious, you know your budget.
Tax levy increase.
Okay. And the rest of my questions come back later. Some questions on automobiles because you made some contradictory numbers there, but I'll come back to that.
Erin?
I just, a few comments. Talking to my constituents over the years, and especially these last 2 years, one of the most important things they talk about is public safety, especially along Highway 50, where the speed limit is actually 55, and if you're going 55, you get run over. So that is a big concern, is speeding out by me, and public safety just in general. So I, in my opinion, and others, we want to prioritize public safety over other things that we believe in the budget are more wants than needs. And I believe we need more sheriff's deputies. And I believe I have discussed with other supervisors in other areas of the budget where we can make cuts to fund these positions, but we're not gonna bring those up till those areas of the budget get brought up. So in the coming nights, I will propose ways to fund these positions so it will not raise the tax levy. That's all.
Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I'm a firm believer in the added personnel, detectives, deputies, and the data analysts. I think it's a good, prudent way to go as we grow here as a county. So I'm firmly in support of the county executive and the budget she delivered, and then also the committee's recommendations. I just noticed from my observation of enforcement, really good job on Sheridan Road, north-south, you know, it's the main thoroughfare. Deputies are working all the time, traffic is a big deal, I mean, yeah. Huge deal. Can you speak to the fact that as I was coming back from Milwaukee County today, I noticed Racine County always has such a presence on the interstate in terms of enforcement there. Kenosha somewhat, not as much. Is that really a revenue source? I mean, can we look at that in terms of being able to augment our county coffers by additional enforcement on the interstate?
We can. We actually added a few deputy sheriffs and created the traffic interdiction unit years ago. But what has happened is the calls for service have kept increasing. And as we are short deputy sheriffs, those are the easiest cars for us to take and put to fill a district. So the revenues from the traffic interdiction unit, it falls. So the traffic and what the squads you see on Sheridan Road probably are the traffic interdiction unit. I think we have three TIU. And Racine has about a dozen. So they hit the interstate hard. It does generate revenue. And does it actually, is it a wash? I don't think it is, but it does generate revenue and it does slow people down. If you talk to the average person that drives through Kenosha, Racine, and Milwaukee, most of them will tell you, we slow down when we hit the Racine line because they know that there's deputies up there all the time.
Okay.
So we could, but like again, we pilfer, if we're short people, we'll pilfer those people first because it doesn't create overtime. It's a additional district, sort of, that isn't tied to taking calls. Did I answer your question?
No, that's good. And I am pleased with what's being done on Sheridan Road, because that is a big north-south between, of course, Milwaukee and the state line. And there's plenty of malfeasance that occurs in that stretch. I'm sure you can speak to that more than we can. On the revenue side, we have no more ICE detainees. They're done, right? Immigration, they've been done for a period of time.
Are we talking about the amendment, or are we talking?
Are we still on the amendment?
Yes.
Okay. I'll leave my conversation that then. Okay.
All right. Any other discussion on the amendment? You're ready to vote? Do you want a voice vote, or do you want a roll call?
Roll call.
All right. John?
Aye.
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 You.
Yes. How would you like to vote?
Aye.
Very good. All right. Thank you.
Like to give
further discussion on the budget or resolutions? Yes.
Yes. Sure. On the ammunition line item here, I see it's a drop of about half there. Is that because of less training, or the switch between 9mm, 40 cal, or...?
It's because the last 2 years have been very, very difficult to get ammunition, and ammunition, our order wouldn't even come in for a year. So basically what has happened is we got last year's order, and we got this year's order. So we're good for next year with getting about half of the ammunition that we have. So in 2024, expect it to go back to what it was. But for 2023, we have a supply right now, and we'll be good. We'll make it through with half of our budget for 2023.
Thank you.
All right, anything further? Brian?
A number of questions. I said judiciary and law specifically. You made a comment about number of vehicles in the budget. You said 11, budget said 13.
I said 13. It's 13 every year.
Okay. But the question was, there was also a question about delivery from 2022. How many are outstanding from 22?
Oh, outstanding?
13 squad cars, 4 admin vehicles.
13 plus 4
yep.
are outstanding currently?
Yes, sir.
And in the replacement volume for 23, does that take that into account? Are we doubling replacement in 1 year, or?
It takes it into account.
You said it does?
Yeah, it does. So when we develop the numbers for next year for how many squad cars need to be ordered, we take into account the squads that we have coming this year.
Okay. So in the budget for 23, you expect those to be delivered in 23 or 24?
We expect them to be delivered in 23.
Okay.
You're talking about 22s?
Yeah. Well, 22s are coming in 23, so to speak. I mean, we just went by a dealership lot today, and I think it had 4 cars in the lot, and it's a very large dealership. So
they probably weren't even their cars.
I think his employees just trying to make it look better. So I want to make sure I understood that. There are a couple other things. There's 412 under ARPA federal grant. That's just a placeholder on revenue. That's just recognition. Is that so? I have it right.
Yeah, that's equal to what was allocated from last year.
Okay.
The like amount for this year as well.
Okay. And retaining ICE holds federal inmate housing. Why do we hold the number if we don't have that revenue coming?
So we've been gradually lowering it. That's kind of the way that you bring revenue lines back to actuals. You don't want to just cut a revenue line by $600,000, $700,000 in 1 year. So we gradually bring it down to what it's supposed to be. We also still receive funds into that line item. That is also where our USMS revenue goes into. So anytime we handle a marshal inmate, that revenue goes into that line. It's a little bit volatile with that. Some months we have a lot, sometimes we have a little. So we've been responsibly bringing that down to an actual amount by removing the ICE revenue from that.
I understand the strategy, but if I'm not bringing in $100,000, I'm not bringing in $100,000. I would think gradual. I don't understand that, but okay, that's the deal.
That's
okay. The head shake says that's the deal.
Yep.
You took care of that. Staff development, $70,000 over prior year, over 2021. What are you doing differently that it's a $70,000 increase for staff development?
I answered that already. At the end of this year, we'll have about 30% of our deputy sheriffs that will have less than 2 years. There's a lot of training, whether it be accident investigators or any of the other schools that our deputies have to go to, and schools are not cheap. So we need to send a lot of, we have to have a lot of training for our deputy sheriffs and our detective bureau.
I'm supervisors too.
Okay, apologize for missing that. However, I did, so I appreciate the restatement on it. Request titles. NAFCARE was the last one on my list of questions. NAFCARE also came up at Judiciary and Law, and we tried to soften it enough so they didn't think we were dumping them off the edge of the cliff, but if it's evident that they perhaps underbid under the guise of gaining the contract, are there other contract opportunities that we could pursue, or are we really kind of hamstrung there and they are tail wagging the dog?
No, we did talk to 3-4 other agencies that do that. And we asked them for just, we gave them a tour and we kind of told them what was going on. And we found out that even they agreed that what they did is they, when the NAFCARE bid on this initially, salaries were less, and they kind of mirrored it. We do have about, like I said, 3 or 4 that are willing to jump in if we actually find that NAFCARE is not living up to it. Our discussions with our purchasing and Corporation Council is, let's see if we can get NAFCARE to live up to what they're supposed to do, and if we have issue, there's a 90-day clause that both either they can get out or we can get out. So if for some reason they tried to bump it up again and we don't think it should have been bumped up, we can give 90-day notice and get someone else in.
Okay.
So we do have other people that we have, other agencies that we've talked to that are on standby, softly.
The impression I had through J-Law was it was a little bit of malfeasance on their part. It sounded like they softened it to gain the bid and win the contract, and then fairly quickly came back with a much more substantive number. It was hard to accept during the discussion at that time that it was just due to payroll costs, et cetera, but I appreciate that you're staying after it. And I did have a commentary statement. I appreciate when you guys come by. When a squad comes by, I'm on JB. It's kind of off the beaten path for some, but it's a main beaten path for others. But squad goes by, two thoughts go through my mind. First is, go get them, Tiger. The second is, I hope it's not one of my neighbors. So I appreciate what you're doing, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bill?
Back to the line item, which is the revenue side, which is the U.S. Marshals and ICE detainees. They are the same revenue stream in terms of your accounting practice. Is that right?
You mean ICE and U.S. Marshals?
Yes.
Yeah, they go into the same line item.
We know ICE is out. We're not going to see them. They've gone away. They're not going to come back, which is probably okay.
Yeah,
it is okay. U.S. Marshals, what is the deal with them? Are they just not worth, they don't pay their own way? Would we get more of them if we could get more? What's the situation? Where are we at with that?
We've been trying for years to get ICE and U.S. Marshals to bump up the rates. We've submitted proposals to try to do the exact same thing a few years ago when Nancy was here, and we tried to justify it, and they just basically come back and say the federal government has no money to raise rates. So it boiled down to, with, we don't have that many U.S. Marshals, but it still generates, I think, ballpark of about 40, but it still generates about $1 million, and we have them in dorms with our other inmates right now. So if we had to, do I think that they're making a lot of extra money? I don't think they are. That's why when immigration left, with all the restrictions and all everything that they made us do, it wasn't a profitable situation. They hadn't raised their revenues, their per diems, in 25 years. And obviously everyone's expenses goes up except for what the immigration felt for us. So when they left, we were very happy with it, and it was a lot less headaches. Right now, even if we wanted to take them back, we can't find personnel to watch them. So right now, we can manage the 40 people, the U.S. Marshals that we have mixed in with everybody else, and we can manage them. At some point, is it a possibility that they might have to go to, if we had opened up a special dorm just for them, we would have to raise the question, is it worth keeping them? But as right now, we don't have to.
So the $1 million you quote, is that a gross or a net figure?
Gross.
Gross, okay. So you still have expenses to take out of that $1 million, which should be, give us a ballpark, does it run, what percentage of money does it cost to support them?
We haven't done that. I mean, it'd be food, it'd be clothing.
It's not what they pay us. The U.S. Marshal Service gives us $70 per day per inmate.
Okay.
It costs more than $70 per day per inmate to house them.
Okay, so it's really not a very viable income.
It's not a money maker for us, okay. No. Right.
Concludes my questions, thank you.
As we're talking, and this is just kind of setting the path for down the road past me, is something that one of the things we're able to do right now that saves us with correctional officers, we're short, we're very, very short, but we've overhired deputy sheriffs and we've placed them into our jail facilities to fill spots. And that has helped us in a few different ways. Years ago, for most of the people that are here wearing uniforms, you would have hundreds of people that would sit down and apply to be a deputy sheriff and take a test. And when they took a test, that list would last us 2 years. We work off that list for 2 years. Now we have maybe 60 people that apply, 40 people that show up, and 5 people that actually pass. And that list lasts us, I think we've tested 3 times in the last year. So we need to get our hands on these people that are good candidates for deputy sheriff. So we hire them, overhire, put them in our jail so they have a working knowledge of our jail, which is a good thing. We keep them here, and it really costs us very little. It almost costs us exactly the same thing as a new correctional officer, as a new deputy sheriff. But we keep them, and we don't fall behind in deputy sheriffs and put them on the road. What we're thinking about doing now, and again, it'll be for past me, but we're looking at possibly creating, and we don't have this figured out yet, but other agencies in the state have a deputy one and a deputy two system.
Right.
And the deputy, whichever way you want to look at it, the deputy one is the deputies that go on the road. A deputy two would be kind of a correctional officer or has the potential to go on the road. And again, we haven't got this figured out yet. But it's something that my staff, that will be someone else's staff in the future, maybe coming to you and looking to brainstorm this with you after they have a better idea of how to make this work, a deputy one and deputy two. One of the big things that the system also helps is, you know, we have a very, very hard time keeping our correctional staff. And one of the things is the retirement. The correctional officers have to work, I think it's till 65. And there's not many correctional officers that want to keep working as a correctional officer until they're 65. It would be incentive for them, being a deputy too, to maybe be able to retire at 60 or something along that line and give them an incentive to stay. Right now, I asked one of our lieutenants at our detention facility, I said, how many of the new correctional officers that we've given you in the last year do you still have? And they said, one. Of all the people that we've hired and sent to them, they maintain one person out of the whatever we sent. And we as a county, as a department, and really in conjunction with all of you, we're going to have to come up with a way to figure out how to retain these people. Because what we're currently doing, it needs to improve.
All right, further discussion? Seeing none, is there a motion?
I would move approval.
All right, is there a second? Is there further discussion on the amended budget? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It passes. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, we'll move on to joint services.
I was hoping the sheriff would segue into the contract.
You want me to stay?
We thought it made sense to discuss the sheriff's ratified contract during the sheriff's portion of the
I see, all right. Okay. So you want to talk about the contract now as opposed to during your time?
I thought it made sense to present
all right.
in conjunction with the sheriff's department.
Go ahead.
Good evening. You all should have received a copy of the agreement terms.
I have it. In my computer.
We should have a handout there.
It's here. If anybody's missing it, you can have mine. I have it from the other night.
Everybody got one?
Go ahead.
So we reached a tentative agreement with the Commercial County Deputy Sheriff's Association on September 7th. That tentative agreement was ratified by its membership this month. I'm told the vote was 99-1 in support of the terms. We're looking at a three-year agreement beginning January 1st, 2023, ending December 31st, 2025. In the packet, I'll draw your attention to the last page, which is reflects the pay. So as the sheriff had indicated, January 1st, 2023 would be a 3% increase. Wages, July 1st of 2023, an additional 2.75%. Second year of the agreement, 2% at the start of the year, and 2.25% at mid-year. And for the final year of the agreement, 2025, there would be a 3.75% increase. In addition, we would be increasing canine pay to $550 a month. Those are for canine officers. Beyond those economic terms, in the packet, go through all of the language changes for the agreement. The changes focus on time off, including shortening the waiting period for accident and sickness pay for an illness, loosening restrictions on using casual days, expanding holidays and decreasing time to earn vacation, and updating their selection process. There's also a stipend for additional specialty gear beyond what is issued by the department for those who are appointed to the tactical response team. Paying double time for hours worked over 16 consecutively, which of course we hope does not happen very often. And updating the residency requirement to 20 miles to match the civil service ordinance, which was passed by the board. So that's a highlight on those language changes. Again, this has been ratified by the association, and it would be included as part of the budget resolution for 2023 to approve the terms that we've agreed to.
All right, discussion. Questions? Discussion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All right, further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you. All right, now we'll move on to the next item, joint services. That's on page 87.
My name is Joshua Nielsen. I'm the director of Commercial Joint Services.
So just kind of quickly, I know you have some information in front of you. I know our financials are a little bit different than what you see in some of the other with the county, but you should have gotten that in advance. The Joint Services total operating budget for 2023, as unanimously approved by the Joint Services Board, is $11,019,376. This represents a expenditure increase in excess of our revenues of about $477,000. The total city county levy is $9.5 million, and the total levy increase is $251,000, just over $251,000, 2.72% increase. The county's portion of that tax levy increase is actually a decrease of just under 1%, about $4,000 in comparison to the 2022 budget. These numbers do not include, though, that the county is funding through the CIP just over $30,000 for computer equipment for the 911 center. The computers that the dispatchers use to enter calls for service and communicate that information to the units on the road, those need to be replaced. They're going on 7 years, and it's a very critical piece of equipment that needs to be replaced. Under expenditures, personnel services increase is about $363,000. That includes wage increases of 3% January 1, and then step increases throughout the year. And we are working with the wage and compensation consultants on trying to finalize that plan exactly, and then we'll be taking that to the Joint Services Board. We've been working with that consultant for the last several months. There's a modification to our holiday schedule, so this includes that to align with what the county's holiday schedule is. We're also modifying our vacation policy so that employees will earn vacation more rapidly than what they earn it now. Now it takes 7 years to go to the next step, so this will decrease that to 5 year steps. And we're putting additional vacation time on the front ends because currently new employees coming in do not really receive much vacation time, almost zero until they get into that their second year. So we're trying to modify that plan because it just does not work with hiring, and it creates a problem for on that end. We also have increased to our insurance premiums. We were able to maintain insurance premiums. The increase is 7%. We're also seeing some increases in our contractual services of $82,000 that play into those total numbers. The majority of that is the 911 system is 5 years old now. It was replaced 5 years ago. The maintenance contract on that system was in place for 5 years, and now that maintenance contract's coming up, so we're gonna have to start paying on an annual basis. Supplies and materials are increasing, obviously. The majority of our supplies and materials is fuel costs. Joint Services operates the fuel system at the public safety building, so we have an expense and we have a revenue because we bill it out back to both the city and the county. So under expenses, you see a large increase there for fuel costs, but that is offset by the revenue on the revenue side. Obviously, fuel costs have gone up significantly. And then we have a couple of items under capital expenditures under the fleet maintenance department for some equipment that they're requesting, including a brake lathe to try to machine the brake rotors that are on the vehicles. Instead of replacing the rotors, the idea is to try to machine them, keep them on there, and get more life out of them, and eventually try to save some money and supplies going down the road. And then there's fluid exchange machines that are coming up for replacement that need to be replaced. So that's what the $26,000 is for. So that covers the highlights of what's in the budget, in the Joint Services budget. I can answer any questions.
Discussion, Dave.
Through the chair to Josh.
on the health insurance, what's your procurement cycle for that? Mm-hmm. I'm forgetting. It's every 5 years. I'll let you answer.
On the insurance? No, so it's
the health insurance.
It's on an annual basis.
Oh, per annum.
Yeah, and our struggle with insurance has been historically that trying to get renewal numbers by the time the joint services budget needs to be approved. The joint services budget needs to be approved by September 15th. And it, every year it's a challenge to get that information from the insurance companies. The last couple of years we've been with WCA. And that's really, really truly a self-funded plan through the with a third-party administrator. And because of that, our broker has been able to get renewal numbers prior to our budget meeting. Mm-hmm. So this is really only the second year in a row that we've been able to do that.
So your TPA is Johnson Financial?
No, actually, he's our broker.
He's the broker?
Yep. Our TPA is United Healthcare. UMR.
But so you buy a premium-based?
Correct.
So you're not self-insured, so what insurance company do you buy it from? UMR?
Yes, it's through, UMR is the right. third party administrator, and then WCA is the...
Oh, UMR is the TPA, and oh, you still have WCA?
Correct.
Okay. Sorry for the odd maze of questions, but that I was just trying to figure out who, it's WCA, okay, and you do it annually.
We do it annually.
Good. That answers my question. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
You were alluding to 9/11 dispatch, and there's a certain amount of system maintenance that's due now annually because the, what is it, 5-year time period's over, is that correct?
Correct.
So what's that projected to be per annum?
So there's two parts to this. There's the 911 system itself, and then there's the text to 911 part.
Sure.
So that total is about $85,000.
Per year.
Okay.
So if you take a look at your future, will this particular system have a service life? It'll be good for the next 5, next 10? Do we have an idea how long it's going to be good for?
We do. So they suggest that you start updating, refreshing some of the major components such as servers in a 5 to 7 year range. So typically 7 years is what you're looking for. Of course the vendor wants you to do it at 5 years, but so we're working with them to get some figures on what that looks like that's going to cost. You can refresh the entire system by replacing every component, or you can space that out and
so they're recommending hardware refresh at a certain amount. But in terms of, like, is there a limitation to the software? Is the software going to have an expiry date, or is it not going to, or what's that like?
So the current software that we have right now would not expire, and that'll be maintained. However, when we refresh, depending on when we refresh and what mm-hmm. those servers are coming in at, there that could impact if you need to upgrade software, which then you get into licensing costs and everything else as well.
So when you take a look at this $85,000 per year, do you think that's a reasonable fee to say going the next, you know, 2, 3, 5 years, whatever, it'll be about that much approximately per year? Is that a reasonable expectation?
It absolutely
okay.
is.
Second thing about 9/11 dispatch is, in terms of personnel to actually be there on the firing line, so to speak, take the phone calls, dispatch, how many FTEs are we talking about for that?
So we have 40 total for the department. 38 of those are frontline supervisors and dispatchers.
Okay. And do you have any vacancies in that particular?
Yes, we do. We've historically always been dealing with vacancies in the department. Right now we have 7 vacancies.
Okay. So do you have any particular new strategy going forward in this budgetary cycle to attract and retain?
So first off, the wage and compensation study, increasing the wages. We've presented to the executive committee. We've talked about this. We have joint services in comparison to surrounding communities. It's very low paying. So that is part of the issue. So that is one of the things that we want to do. We are promoting our health benefits as a marketing strategy, and that actually we've seen an increase in, since we started doing that, we've seen an increase in applications. And getting more active in the community, trying to be out there to present some of the benefits that Joint Services has to offer and what that job is. We've had multiple people attending those things, and we've seen an increase in our application rate, which has been huge. The sheriff talked a little bit about it in his presentation. We were experiencing exactly that same problem. We used to get 200 plus applications, and for about a year and a half, we'd only see about 40 if we were lucky. And then out of that, you might get one that's qualified. So those are some of the strategies that we're using. And then, of course, on the retention side of things, the wages help as well. And we're trying to, with some of these benefits, with the vacation, modifying this so that they get a little bit better benefit.
So if it is a wage thing for retaining and also hiring additional new personnel, are those levy dollars, or is this any of this ARPA? Where does the money come from?
So Joint Services, being as unique as we are with the setup, we cannot apply for ARPA direct funds. So it is mostly levy dollars. But I believe in the past, I believe the county has applied some ARPA funds to help offset some of those costs through their budgeting, through your budgeting side of things. But directly, we're not eligible for ARPA funds.
That's my question. Thank you.
Further discussion? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is the District Attorney Victim Witness for review.
Hello, everyone. We sent two pieces of paper that were emailed. I don't know if they're part of your packet or if you guys need us to get these. You guys have this.
The staff did send them out.
They were sent out.
Okay. I believe they're hard copies.
And we got hard copies, too.
All right, why don't you proceed, Mike?
Sure. The first document that I'm looking at is the one that says District Attorney's Office Proposed Budget Changes for 2023. And I just put that together just so that you had an opportunity to see where we are requesting reductions in line items that we have discretion over. And so you can see that we're requesting reductions in multiple line items where the reductions in saving to the county is the $34,800. Most importantly there is the second one from the top, which is other professional services. Members of the county board know that you guys have been assisting in contracting a half-time attorney position to assist with termination of parental rights cases to deal with the backlog and huge extra number of those that we had over about a four-year period. I'm told by Ron Rogers, who's the head of social services in this regard, that at the end of the first half of this year, we will have managed to completely gotten back to the normal numbers of TPRs that we've had over the last decade. So because of the cooperation of Judge Kirkman, who took on cases in addition to his calendar and did TBR cases, and because there were additional social workers hired to handle these cases a couple years ago, and because of your funding of that half-time position with the DA's office, all the parties consider this a fantastic success, and we're going to finish those cases, I believe, getting us a situation where children who have an adoptive resource ready for them, essentially getting them to that adoptive resource, to their permanent homes, about a year earlier than we would have had you not funded this over multiple years. So this time we're asking, in accordance with what I've been told by Ron Rogers and our own staff, we're asking for you to essentially give us half of what we have been budgeting. So that's the reduction of the $28,300. That will fund that half-time position for the first half of the year, The employee who has that, the attorney who's doing that, has agreed to continue on with that. So that's we no longer need the full funding. As I indicated last year, I was hoping that we would get to this point, and we are at that point today. In terms of increases, you know, a very small increase in expert witness fees. That's because we have a large number of the homicides that occurred 2 years ago. As many of you know, we had an increase in our number of homicides in the county 2 years ago. Those cases are about to come to trial. In each homicide trial that we have, a person from the Milwaukee Medical Examiner's Office comes and testifies. And altogether, that typically will cost between $2,000 and $5,000, depending on how extensive the testimony is. And so we need to increase the budget mildly to be able to accommodate those witnesses primarily. And then the $70,000 is what I call the Mark Jensen is back line item in this. It is a one-time line item that I am requesting. It is a line item specific to that prosecution, so any dollar that the DA's office does not spend on the Jensen trial, which is now set for the second week of January, of course will go back into county coffers. Will be money that will not be spent on other items because it's his own separate line item. We have costed out the Jensen case, estimating who's on our witness list, what it will cost to hire the experts, fly people out, hotels, et cetera. As I mentioned to the previous committee that I talked to, this case was last tried in 2008, I believe. The homicide occurred in 1998. And so none of the officers who investigated this case are still working in law enforcement. None of the experts are still working in their chosen professions. None of the witnesses, frankly, are in the same places they were previously. To try the case, it's our obligation to fly them to our location. To no one's surprise, a number of the witnesses have ended up in either Arizona or Florida. As you may be aware, that sometimes occurs after a passage of 24 years. And so we've costed this out. We have a small cushion that we put in terms of our costs. But we're hoping that $70,000 would be enough to try the case. Judge Schrader tells me, he's my source of this, that this is that in 2008, it was the longest in duration jury trial on a criminal case in the history of Wisconsin. I'm not aware of any case that's gone longer since. And so if you think about the Jensen case, we are very fortunate that Bob Jamboy will be lent to us by the Portage County DA's office to come back to try the case. He is by far the most expert person in the state on this case, and our deputy DA will be joining him in doing that for those many weeks. So again, that is the only other increase we have in our budget. If I can ask you to take a look at the second chart. The other thing I wanted to do for this committee was to look at, have you get an opportunity to look at the pattern since 2018. I assume that as budget stewards, you guys benefit from getting a chance to see sort of what our pattern has been. And again, these are the discretionary items within our budget. But I think you can see there's been a substantial amount of savings that we have asked you to cut our budget on many different occasions. With the resulting reductions, and then you can see the increases. There are two positions in the budget, of course, that are the same positions. They were the ARPA-funded positions you guys voted for mid-year last year. If you recall, we asked for two support positions for the two state ARPA-funded lawyers. Those positions have their full year of funding in this year's budget. We'll be back next year. Last year you funded them for a half year. This is our full year, and then next year we'll be back asking you to half year fund those two positions. One of those is a victim witness, and one is a paralegal. That's all I have, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, discussion, David.
But through the chair to finance, is that Jensen trial funded with ARPA?
It is.
Okay, thank you. That's my question.
Right. Anything else?
Move to approve.
Second.
Further. Second.
Further discussion.
Can we have the Yiggs vote first?
What's that?
Can we have the Yiggs vote first?
We can. Any other discussion? And we'll do a voice vote on this. Would you like to vote first?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, the rest of you, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right, then we'll move on here to juvenile intake, page 78 in your book.
I also have a handout, and I did send it on Friday, but just in case it was not included, I have a... And I came with plenty today.
More paper. Like airplanes.
Does everybody have the handout?
Spitballs.
No?
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anybody else?
We can share.
Okay. Good evening, committee members. My name is Mary Beyer. For those of you I've not yet met, I'm the director of Kenosha County Juvenile Intake, and with me is Judge Jason Brissell. I'm here tonight to present to you my 2023 budget request. For 2023, I'm recommending changes to only six line items, which are summarized in the handout I provided. County administration is recommending increases in two of those line items. First, an $8,813 increase in the personnel appropriation unit, which I believe includes adjustments up and down across six line items in this unit. Second, county administration is forecasting the need for a $695 increase in the public liability insurance line item. In regard to direct labor, printing and duplication, and the mileage travel line items, I'm recommending a 10% decrease across the board as a result of lower spending the last 3 to 5 years. One of the largest line items in my budget is the other professional services line item, which covers all expenses related to housing juveniles in secure detention. Through the third quarter, expenses have totaled $232,555. You may ask, why are we underspending this line item this year? There's a few reasons. At this time last year, I came to the committee and I requested $543,000 to cover 2022 expenses because we were on a trajectory to spend that much. Juveniles were staying in detention the longest I've seen in my tenure, which was 24 days last year. Racine had raised their 2021 daily rate from 175 to 225 for 2022. As we approach the end of 2022, and after our Kenosha County budget was finalized, Racine contacted me and told me they were raising the rate again, this time to $325 a day, compared with other facilities in the state charging only an average of $154 a day. I contacted finance, I talked to Matt and Barna. I was told that some carryover would be placed in my 2022 budget to cushion the blow. I believe this was $120,000, which brought us to a modified budget of $663,000. As we began to move through 2022, and with the help of negotiations, Racine decided to lower their rate, but only to $275 daily. This was not finalized until the end of February, a couple months into this year. However, starting back on January 1st, my staff and I worked extremely hard to keep expenses under budget, and we pursued detention beds outside of Racine whenever possible. We have built upon our existing relationships with Washington, Fond du Lac, Dane, and Sheboygan counties. It's important to note Kenosha has no guaranteed beds at any detention center. Juvenile detention beds are very limited today. Sometimes it takes multiple phone calls over a few hours to locate a facility. Sometimes it takes all day or all night. There are only 12 juvenile detention centers in the state of Wisconsin. Milwaukee will not accept any out-of-county youth. Marathon is currently closed due to staffing issues, and Brown County is soon to follow suit. When we are seeking a bed, we are competing with 59 other counties, some tribes, and now even out-of-state jurisdictions. Female beds have become a valuable resource, and there are frequently none available. Through the third quarter of this year, we have used 455 beds at Racine and 714 beds elsewhere at a lower rate. Had we only used Racine this year and at the $325 rate, we would have spent $379,000 through the third quarter. Thankfully, the length of stay in detention has dropped significantly this year, which has helped the budget tremendously. Credit goes to the courts and the judges, DAs, and public defenders and DCFS for that. Most detention centers will keep their rates consistent going into 2023. However, we expect a dramatic increase in 2024. For next year, I'm recommending a $50,000 decrease in the other professional services account. I would caution the committee and the county board to not consider any further decrease, as the number of juveniles held and the length of stay can fluctuate drastically year to year. We also don't know how much longer we will be able to find a lower priced facility with an open bed willing to admit a youth from Kenosha. And we may need to use Racine much more frequently. In summary, for 2023, I'm recommending a $41,211 decrease in the juvenile court intake budget. Thank you.
All right, discussion? Brian.
A couple questions, if I could, to help my understanding. That puts Racine at 1.6 to 1.8 over everyone else. What do they justify the bed rate to?
When I was told the rate went up to $325, the justification I was given was that's their expense. That's what it costs to house a juvenile.
So Racine is at a rate of, I'll just make it 1.5, it's easier, above everyone else to house?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have, clearly we don't because you're able to use them, but there are no restrictions on youth being placed outside of our county. They can go wherever you can find a bed.
They can go wherever we can find a bed. Late last year and early this year, we were in a situation with a female, a very young female, that most facilities were refusing due to her high need, her mental health status, etc. And I had begun looking across the state line in Lake County. I consulted with court counsel, was given the okay. And thankfully, we didn't need to go that far, but that's what we've been doing.
On a tour that we took of our detention and jail, they said the female population is increasing and the female population is much more difficult than it has been in the past. I'll say it nicely.
Yes.
Are you seeing the same?
Same exact thing.
Your caseload is increasing on the female side,
yes.
Yet female beds are scarce, if at all existent.
Yes.
Is there any vehicle to rectify that? Is there some ongoing discussion someplace?
There are in some of the facilities, including Racine, and this could be what they credit their expense to. There's mental health counseling that is being provided, but that's also being provided at Washington County at a rate of $150. There's clearly a need for more mental health in our community. I know even with the kids we work with that don't end up in custody, there's a long waiting list to get in to see a therapist.
If we take a troubled youth and put them Portage, that's a reasonably long drive. We have a location fee to get them there, et cetera. What's the offset with that? Are we still ahead of Racine, or is that transport and sustaining them up there costing us more?
If my staff and I foresee that the stay is only going to be 2 to 3 nights, we'll go to Racine. If it's a long-term commitment, something 10 days or longer, we'll try another facility.
So you're utilizing strategies to mitigate
right.
some of it.
And we're also, you know, we get a lot of no's. It's not like it used to be. When I started in 1986, there were 18 facilities. And so 6 of those facilities have closed.
Thank you. as I'm looking at the numbers, we're actually trending down until this year through 9/30. We're at 82, so we'll probably surpass 21 by a little bit.
Right.
In those retained.
I think 21 was an anomaly. It's just was odd all around the numbers.
Okay.
Keep in mind the numbers you're looking at are through the third quarter. We are not up that much. Usually we have an uptick when school starts. I'm still waiting for that, but we are in October.
So, but overall, it still appears the trend is a little bit downward, which surprises me when I hear groups of kids smash and grabs and everything else. I would think there'd be higher detention rates, but these are a little more sophisticated.
Go ahead.
The juvenile crime rate is actually down. So the number of juveniles that are entering into our system is actually at a lower rate than it has been. So the number of juveniles that we're seeing in what we would call delinquency cases is down.
Okay.
So while the crime rate of felonies is actually up, that I can talk to you all night about, but I won't. For juvenile delinquencies, a child under the age of 17 committing an offense, it's actually down.
Could it also be argued that the charging rate is down as more are pled out, more are dismissed, moved, things like that? Because see in the press, what you see in your world around you appears different than that.
Right, so we do a juvenile justice report card every year, and so the first stop for a juvenile who commits a crime is actually Mary's office. So Mary's office will decide whether it's a deferral or whether it's should go straight to the DA's office. The DA's office gets it after Mary's office. They can also overrule Mary if Mary says it's a first-time offender on a retail theft, no prior history, and we can have them come in, do restitution, do other things, and divert from the system and retain the same benefit of the child never coming back and learning a lesson. Then we'll do it that way. And the DA can always go, nope, you're coming into the system, into the formalized system with the courts. If they violate the agreement that they've signed with Mary's office, they can come back to the court system also in a delinquency. But the last reports, I mean, COVID kind of, you know, puts a wrinkle in reports because it makes it look like everything went down, but it was just because there wasn't a lot of activity going on. We're not seeing that in our report card of more diversions or anything like that. We are pretty steady, man.
I looked at delinquency petitions. These are case files. It was through Thursday of last week. We were three behind last year as of Thursday.
So we will be up.
We will be above last year. Right. Okay.
The but other, 21 is an outlier.
Yeah,
right. So
yeah, the other part of this is there's always a change with judges, and I don't know how to explain this. When judges come in, there are a number of reasons why a child could go to detention. One would be pretrial. So in other words, a child's committed a serious offense, can't be safely maintained in the community, therefore is placed in detention until the disposition occurs. Determined court trial takes about 30 days to get to that point. We can also use detention for sanctions. So in other words, child is on a dispositional order, commits another crime, violates terms of supervision, however, and the judge can say, well, you're going to go for 3 days up to detention, 10 days up to detention, or however long. Actually, it's 10 days per violation, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's 10 days per violation. I apologize. I'm in the criminal division now. So, or as kind of not a sentence, because juveniles are not sentenced. The goal is rehabilitation, not necessarily punishment. But if the court believes that the object lesson of time in detention would be assistive in reaching that rehabilitation, then the court can also do it as a part of disposition. Now, that's for the children who are kept in supervision in our community. There's a whole other situation going on if a child is committed an offense that the court believes needs to be sent to corrections, and that's a whole other group of children who are not necessarily, they may be pretrial detainees who then end up going to corrections, but they may not be, those bed days are not paid for out of juvenile intake, they're paid for out of DCF.
Thank you. My brother must have had a good judge, he put him in the Navy. Thank you.
All right, further discussion? Bill?
You'd mentioned earlier on, Mary, that there was a 24-day average at one point for the length of detention. So that, of course, computes into a certain amount of dollar cost that goes along with it. Do I intimate or understand at this point we're not looking at that long of an average detention? Can you speak to that? Why is that?
Sure. I actually brought it to Judge Russell's attention last year. I was becoming concerned about it. When the DA's office files a petition to waive a juvenile into adult court, there's no time limit. And these waiver hearings were being set out as far as 60 days, sometimes longer.
Sure.
So I approached Judge Russell about it. He brought it to a judge's meeting. I presented, and the judges agreed to try and keep it within a 30-day limit. And I think that has significantly helped drop.
So if I understand what you're saying, even though the individual may be waived into adult court, it was happening in a more timely manner between the time they were waived in and they actually went into the courtroom. Is that correct?
From the time the DA filed the petition,
yes,
asking the court to waive, okay, them, to the time of the hearing where the court makes the decision,
okay,
there has to be an investigation,
sure,
and a report.
Right.
Now it's being done more likely within 30 days.
Okay.
And the court also prioritized children who remain in detention but are yet waived into adult court, because,
okay,
certain children, even though their case may go to adult court, they're not allowed in the county jail pursuant to both state and federal law,
I
because
see.
Of their age.
Gotcha.
So not only was the 24 days a hit to the budget, it was also clogging the beds. There's only so,
right,
many beds, and since we've been able to move kids through faster, it's opened up more beds.
Well, that was a wise move. Thank you for bringing that to the judge's attention. That was timely. That's my question. I'm done. Thank you.
Further, David.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair to Mary. And Racine, I remember from time to time they tried different programming approaches for the kids. Can you talk to that a bit? Does that ring a bell with you? And are they doing something now?
Right. My budget is only responsible for general population,
right, yeah,
but DCFS budget, they have a program through Racine called the ACE.
That's an ACE.
What is it?
Yeah.
Alternative Correctional Experience.
Right.
Or no, Alternative to Corrections Through Education.
Through,
sorry,
education. I think today, I don't want to even guess on how many kids are in there, but that program is still effective. It's still running. We still use it. I know other counties are using it. That, when my budget went up last year, the ACE number also went up. So they,
yeah,
had to be negotiated back down.
Okay.
And once the SYRCCs are completed under the current law, ACE will disappear.
Oh. No, I found out it's going to continue.
Are they
going to
rewrite the law?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, they may be able to continue it. The law that was agreed to years ago is a little bumpy right now between the legislature and the governor.
Oh.
They haven't finished building the new DOC facility. They haven't funded the SYRCCs. When that occurs, the number of detention beds in the state will actually shrink by even more.
Hmm.
So there'll be less detention beds. Racine will be able to charge correctional fees instead of just detention fees. So we're watching, and I said this a lot in judiciary, watch as the legislature starts up in January with the budget process for them. Please pay close attention to what's happening in juvenile justice, because that will affect when next year comes, when we're trying to figure out, okay, well, now there's hundreds of beds potentially less throughout the entire state.
So the state had these terrible problems. They're building new facilities, right?
Was the plan there? They have a DOC facility that I guess, right, got approved for Milwaukee that would replace Lincoln Hills, and then the SYRCCs,
right,
were four counties, if I remember correctly, Brown, La Crosse, Kenosha, no, I'm sorry, Racine.
I think
there were
five.
Are there five?
Maybe. I don't
know. There were either four or five. The ones I remember are Brown, Kenosha, La Crosse, or I'm sorry, Racine, Brown, La Crosse, Milwaukee, of course. The difficulty is now to send a child to corrections, you have to go through an SYRCC. You can't directly,
right,
go to corrections. You have to go to one of those facilities first. And then those facilities would have to say they cannot meet the need of the child. The child then gets,
right,
sent up to corrections from there. It's not a judicial determination anymore. So.
But Racine is the only county that bought into that.
And their plans,
besides Milwaukee.
Yeah, their plans, which I looked over about 2019, I looked at them, is that there are plenty of court room in that building, so I have to sign off as chief of the district. when I saw their plans, they plan on eliminating a lot of their detention bed space to make it SYRCC space.
So what's the timing of that?
It's all dependent on the state budget in this next cycle, because what Racine's waiting for is the money from the legislature that was promised to pay for it.
I've heard they secured land in Caledonia.
Yeah.
I don't know if they broke ground, what their timeline is.
Right.
It's probably out of scope, but I'm going to ask it just to maybe put the thought out there. We have a detention facility that has at least one wing that's not in use. Would it be beneficial to consider as a county getting involved in the system?
That's a long discussion that actually goes back to Judge Wagner when she was the chief judge. There's a lot of different thought processes on that. There's a upfront cost of repurposing the facility, because there's, while you have a wing, there have to be some changes to meet both federal and state law. There is a little bit of a concern if you build it, they will come. In other
Correct.
Words, if you give judges the resources, they'll use that resource. So there's a little concern that was raised about that. And then there was, at the time, there wasn't, I don't think there was the shortage that we're going to see once, if the legislation continues the way written, I don't think that we ever saw that sort of shortage before. I guess the bigger question, and that's why I suggest just keeping your eyes out on it, I expect, and this is just my opinion, I sit on the Supreme Court's Legislative Committee, as we hear information about it, I think that depending on what occurs in the governor's race, that there may be more suggestions on how to tweak that law or change the implementation of that law, because right now, for example, the law would say I have to send a child to an SYRCC. They don't exist. So courts are actually playing some semantic games to get kids to corrections. And it's a real weird semantic game that the courts are playing, but it's because the law isn't exactly implemented, although it came into effect about 3 years ago. And so I would expect as the new budget comes in for the state, they're going to have to fix that problem one way or the other.
But it does not appear to you that it would be a, call it a 20-year opportunity for a revenue stream. It's
no,
more a cost center and difficult.
Yeah, and I would not be surprised, and again, this is rank opinion, wouldn't be surprised if it got repealed and replaced.
Right.
As they just said, you know what, we tried it this way, it's not a good idea, it never came to fruition, let's write something else, but good. I don't know.
Thank you.
Further discussion here. Yes, John?
You said how many days average they stay in the system, but what is the average population usually on a day?
This year it's been lower. We have 2 youth in detention today. We've been as high as 10 this year, so the average this year is right around 6 or 7.
Perfect. All right. Anything else?
Move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll move on to the circuit court presentation, Becky, and that's at page 7.
That's a happy thing.
Yes.
Good evening. I am pleased to be in front of you to provide some information. Kenosha Circuit Court continues to be a leader in the state of Wisconsin in terms of case dispositions. District 2, which comprises Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth, was the leader last year in state trials, and Kenosha was the leader in there. So our judges and dockets are very busy, and we continue to muddle through the post-pandemic years. Our case filings are at resuming at pre-pandemic levels, but our staff levels continue to remain the same. This past August, we went through a judicial rotation, which occurs every 2 years, and we actually reviewed the caseload. Judge Russell and the judges decided to go from 3.5 criminal cases to 4 criminal cases, so that we can continue disposing those types of cases. Our criminal filings or our civil filings were a little lower, so we decreased the number of judges allotted to those cases. We're slated for over 60 trials to be heard this year in 2022, and our staff continue to meet the statutory time limits in terms of all the methods, all the requirements of the office. So some of the specifics in regards to the budget, in terms of salary, there's a $105,000 increase in that, but the majority of that, $68,000, comes to the addition of the temporary salaries account. For the last 20 plus years, Kenosha County, or our circuit court, has employed two temporary salaries to work on the conversion of paper to electronic filing. That just doesn't include the backlog of paper files that we have in our system, but it goes for the ongoing papers that are still, documents that are still filed in paper by pro se individuals or orders that are done in court, some of the paper documents and exhibits. So HR decided this year to return the temporary salary specific to circuit court back to the budget about 7 or 8 years ago. It was removed and put into countywide, and so now it's being returned back to my budget, and that's a $68,000 increase. The rest are pretty much general salary line items. There is a dollar per day increase that we're requesting for bailiffs, so our civilian bailiffs would be paid $76 per day, and that's paid by a morning session and a half session for that total of $76. We do show a decrease of $33,000 to our other professional services line item. Our other professional service includes our court reporter. That's a part-time position assigned to intake court in the morning because it's a high-volume producing transcript court, so we have an actual court reporter in there. It also includes our per diem court commissioners. That covers our court commissioner vacations and training schedules, our mediation and family court hearings, our notaries, shredding services, and other miscellaneous expenses throughout the year. Through the process of determining, you know, the comparison from year to year, we were able to decrease those line items by $33,000, and we're very comfortable with that. We do see an increase in our jury line item of $13,000 per year, and that's again due to the number of jury trials we're having, the increase in the mileage that we're paying the jurors. But I also want to note that that we have many high-profile trials. We have 3 or 4 scheduled in January, including the Jensen trial, and it's our belief that we're still going to be able to work within our budget to cover those costs, and I won't have to return for any special dollars associated with that. We have a slight increase on interpreters of $7,000, and that kind of goes along with the case filings and criminal case filings. And we're also requesting a guardian ad litem raise of 3% from $61,000 to $62,000 per year. Our guardian ad litems are appointed by the court to represent those in need, children and wards, adults of who are have special needs in court cases. Last year we came to you with a significant request for increase because we were having a problem competing with Racine, that our guardian ad litems were leaving to take the Racine contracts and not retaining here. So that 3% increase will go in line and making sure that we retain them because we need that experience. When we have a turnover in guardian ad litems, it affects the case processing, it affects the families and the wards associated with those cases too. There's a significant increase in our line item of advocate counsel, and that's to the tune of $47,000, which I believe could be on the low side. In the last couple of years, we've seen a significant increase in advocate counsel fees. That's attorney fees that are paid by the county for those individuals who are either not eligible for public defender representation because they're not indigent, or because the public defender is not able to timely appoint an attorney to represent them. And the latter is the significant reason for that increase. So if the defendant's indigent, the public defender works tirelessly trying to find an attorney to take it and they're not unable to, then the judges will appoint that county appointed attorney to represent them. We received a bill today for $14,000 for one of those cases. In normal cases, I can bill that defendant, so over the course of time, we can do that collection agencies if it's court-appointed and not found indigent by the public defender. So in a normal year, I can assume the collection of those costs. However, if they're indigent through the public defender's office and the court's appointing, I can't collect a single dollar on that. It's 100% funded by the county, even though the public defender actually has those dollars in their line item to pay for the cases that they should be representing. So that's a significant cost from the state being shifted back onto the county. We do have a small, minor cost in staff development to continue the Living as a Leader program that was funded through the personnel department in prior years. In terms of revenue, we're increasing our total revenue lines items by about $185,000, and that's due to an increase in our collection process. Over the course of the last 18 months, we worked, our staff worked very diligently in converting cases so that we could turn those debts over from private collection agency to the state debt collection agency, and they have a wider net to pass in terms of collecting those dollars. We also received a $39,000 increase in our court support grant from the state of Wisconsin, and we anticipate that at least being equal going into 2023. So at the end, we are decreasing our reliance on tax levy dollars by a few $20,000 or so. But it's through the conjunctive work of the processes of the judges, the dedication of our staff, and I'll take any questions, and Judge yourself can supplement anything.
All right, thank you. Discussion? David?
Through the chair to Clara, the Living as a Leader program, when you make your presentation, can you discuss that a little bit?
Sure.
And then Supervisor Bashaw and I, when we were doing some continuing education, we learned about a program that they use in Racine. And what was the name of that program again?
Okay, I think
what
it is.
Let me just look here for a moment.
The two guys out of Atlanta.
Yeah. Maybe we can try to. It was their names were Scott Modell and Noel Hagelbrook, but I'm just not getting the name of the program. But it was a similar training program. So maybe we can get the name.
We'll pass it along. They've sent a video or a slide presentation, and the intent was to take it to the executive committee and introduce it to them, and then backwards through the teams. But they're a consultant. They do work in different types of government scenarios. They work extensively with Racine right now. So
that's kind of, it had some similarities to Living as a Leader, but it would be worth taking a look at. So I yield the floor.
All right, anyone else?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a question you have on the revenue side for motor traffic fines, and there's another one. But they have the same line item for the county sheriff's department.
Search
the two, do you guys split those?
Yes, we split them between the sheriff's department, the circuit court, and the district attorney's office.
Okay.
The
so sheriff's it's a department. Three-way split or 60, 20,
no, what is it? 70, 20, 10, something like that. Where no,
seven.
The sheriff's department gets
get
the majority
seven.
Of that,
okay.
Because they're doing the brunt of the online work. The DA's office does the small piece of the prosecution, and then we do the collection.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Further discussion? All right, seeing none, is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second. Oh, Tim's.
All right, further discussion? No. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that concludes the agenda this evening. Is there any other business to come before the committee?
Can we leave our books here, or are there meetings?
All right, yeah, that's important. Yeah.
Martha doesn't want that.
You want them back, I don't know.
And
I have to look.
if you want to sit there, make sure you're not in them, and if there are meetings, we'll move them back onto the budget and bring them back.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
Sorry, right, there's a motion to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We are adjourned.
I'll see you tomorrow evening.
Sounds good. Yeah. Okay. You can leave them here while there's...